Now, Joschka Fischer is proposing that EU matters be decided by simple majority vote. It's very interesting because he said, we have a clear choice now. We can have a truly cosmopolitan Europe, or we can have the nationalist sentiments of the past, as we now see in the Balkans. When I read that, I almost went through the roof. That is so hypocritical, because it was Germany using its veto that precipitated the hostilities in the Balkans. But now, with the dissolution of many of these European countries, there are new nations being formed in Europe, Slovenia, Croatia. I would be willing to bet that Kosovo probably becomes independent. Slovakia has become independent. Czechoslovakia doesn't exist anymore. The Baltic states, the Ukraine, all of these are now independent countries, and many of them are German protectorates. So the more of these countries become German protectorates, and the more of them join the EU, the easier it's going to be for an EU decided by majority vote for Germany to simply dominate the EU to a greater extent than it already does. Because as these countries get broken up, this gives Germany more control over the EU. On March 14th, the EU, by the way, has a rotating presidency of 6 months. I think that the center-left government was specifically put in because the Germans knew they were going to begin their imperial march anew. They were already beginning it, actually. The Drang nach Osten, the traditional drive to the east, was well underway. I think that the center-left government was put in power not only because there had been reaction against the reemergence of German fascism after reunification, the violence by Nazi elements in Germany, aside from the fact that their institutions were never denazified, as I've spoken about before, violence against ethnic groups and individuals in Germany by Nazi elements was so profound and so virulent, this had no coverage in this country. In 1993, the UN Security Council was seriously debating sending peacekeeping forces to Germany to maintain order in Germany. Again, this is the new Germany that has no connection with the past. Nazi, and this is something Americans don't know, but the UN in 1993 was seriously evaluating sending troops to Germany to protect people there from the Nazi hordes that were once again ravaging Germany. I think that one of the Germans think in advance, and I think that this center-left government was deliberately envisioned as a touchy-feely front so that they could put a nice fuzzy hand on the controls when the Luftwaffe took off once again to begin bombing. The recent Kosovo war saw the Luftwaffe engage in a combat role for the first time since World War II. And again, I think you have Martin Walzer and Joschka Fischer saying, you know, we have no more connection with the past. This is not the old Germany. This is the new Germany. And you better not try to connect us with the old Germany. And I was like, we are not the old Germany, but we must do something to combat fascism and ethnic cleansing. That was one of the most grotesque things I've ever seen, the way they talked about how we've got to protect against ethnic cleansing. Joschka Fischer saying we've got to mobilize our forces against fascism. Oh, man, it's quite something. And then, by the way, proposing that majority rule be the way in EU, which would greatly benefit Germany. The EU has a rotating six-month presidency. On March 14th, the Germans put forth the notion, only a vague notion, to be considered sometime in the future, that the EU should have a military component. Then the hostilities began. For the first time, the Luftwaffe began bombing. Since World War II, it was the first time the Luftwaffe had dropped bombs. I think this touchy-feely center-left government, as I said, is a front and was specifically meant to be in power so that when German arms once again began openly manifesting themselves in the Balkans, when the Drang nach Osten once again began to be openly manifested, people would not be able to connect it with Germany's past. And I think that's why Martin Walzer was going, they have no connection with the past, and you better not try to connect us with any, you know, and that's exactly what he said. The bombing campaign began on March 24th. That week, within 5 days, the German-led EU took a number of key steps. In the first place, they passed a resolution which kept the EU budget for the next century down to a level that would have permitted the entry of former communist countries from Eastern Europe into the EU. They also endorsed Palestinian statehood, something which obviously would curry favor with the various Muslim nationalities in the Balkans, including the Kosovars and the Bosnian Muslims. That also, by the way, would have put a lot of heat diplomatically on the United States, which is a supporter of Israel, and would have gained Germany diplomatic currency with the Arab oil-producing states as well. They also introduced a resolution to be adopted by the United Nations condemning capital punishment. Well, none of the European countries has capital punishment. The United States does and is not going to change because of this particular resolution. This was, in my opinion, aimed at embarrassing the United States diplomatically and politically, as was the endorsement of Palestinian statehood. I think what we're looking at, even though the Germans very skillfully positioned themselves alongside the United States, I think that the Germans are behaving in a chauvinistic and nationalistic fashion, and I think that the events that we saw unfolding in Kosovo may very well lead to a German-dominated world in the next century, possibly even war between the United States and the EU, which is already at loggerheads from an economic standpoint. One of the things, by the way, that impressed itself on the European Union was how superior the United States was in the area of high-tech arms. Bear that in mind, because we're going to come back to the military situation. While the war was going on, again, Germany precipitated the breakup of Yugoslavia, but they very skillfully were able to posit themselves as the voice of reason and the peace negotiators. They they basically sponsored most of the peace negotiations and worked very closely with the Russians. This basically was a brilliant, in my opinion, piece of diplomatic and political maneuvering. They positioned themselves alongside the United States in this war so that we couldn't really attack them at the same time as, I don't mean militarily attack them, I mean politically or economically, at the same time as they began behaving in fashion that is detrimental to the United States. This is not to say that I endorse, for example, the way capital punishment is used in this country in any way. I don't. It's used as a vehicle for social repression. But the fact of the matter is that even while we were basically doing all the work in the Balkans War, and I was opposed to that war for reasons that should be pretty clear at this stage of the game, but we did most of the fighting and we endured most of the expense, but Germany, although they were the real authors of this conflict, and their German covert operations in connection with the KLA had much to do with precipitating it, they were able to position themselves in such a way as they came out of this as the voice of reason and the negotiators, the peacemakers. While the war was going on, too, Germany and the EU held out the possibility of EU membership to all of the countries that came out of Yugoslavia, including the Serbs. Then, right about the time the hostilities were being concluded, this EU military union, which was only put forth by the Germans on March 14th as a distant possibility, was formalized. Now, the EU has a military capability, and Germany figures to be picking up most of the pieces from the Kosovar War. Because again, as the countries of Europe fragment, many of them are coming out of this as German protégés, and if in fact EU decision-making goes to majority only, as Joschka Fischer has proposed, this is going to make it that much easier for Germany to dominate EU. Most of the funds that are going to be going to rebuild Kosovo are coming from the European Union and Germany, and it figures, I would be willing to bet that area becomes a German protectorate, in time a German colony. And again, note that the European Union military capability, supposed to be just a distant thing, is now a reality. I would also note at this time that one of the major corporate transactions that took place during the course of the Balkans War was the acquisition of Bankers Trust by Deutsche Bank, thus creating the largest financial institution in the world. And in a recent statement, Rolf Breuer, the head of Deutsche Bank, revealed that the main reason for Deutsche Bank's purchase of Bankers Trust was to get a hold of BT Alex Brown. That's a proprietary company of Bankers Trust that is heavily involved in venture capital in the Silicon Valley. And in fact, Deutsche Bank is drastically raising its profile in Northern California and the Silicon Valley. This, as the military union of the European Union, has become a reality. By the way, thanks. Good night, and thanks for showing up. We got some early leavers there. I'm just expressing my gratitude to them. Now the Deutsche Bank is going to be heavily capitalizing Silicon Valley. Bear in mind that one of the things that impressed itself on the Europeans during this was the superiority of American high-tech arms. I think that this was all envisioned by the Germans a long time ago, and when Rolf Breuer says that basically the reason why they purchased Bankers Trust was to get a hold of BT Alex Brown, which is heavily involved in starting in these venture capital firms, in venture capital undertakings in Silicon Valley, is to close the high-tech gap. And I predict that unless some steps are taken to interdict the German corporate advances into the Silicon Valley, I think in time not only will we see the epicenter of electronics moving outside of the Silicon Valley, but I think sometime in the next century there may very well be high-tech parity or perhaps even superiority by the European forces, at which point the trade disputes between the EU and the United States, which are already gaining momentum, could very easily result in a major war in the next century, or basically, if not an actual shooting war, basically the EU taking the position of primacy from the United States and thumbing its nose at us and saying, yeah, we got the weapons too, so go bleep yourselves. You know, we're not going to stand for this. I think that the German maneuvering with regard to the Balkans war is not only sinister, bodes very poorly for the United States in the future, but I think it's one of the most brilliant pieces of diplomatic and political maneuvering in recent memory. They really aced us. I don't think people in this country even understand what the hell's going on. You know, we're sitting around, had the World Soccer Team win, or, you know, this, that, the other thing, or, you know, worrying about the latest Jive summer movie, or the latest Jive musical act, or, the latest whatever. In the meantime, and this is not to say that I endorse the way the United States has used its position of dominance in the world. I think in many ways we've been very unjust. But I'm telling you, the sun may very well be setting on the American Empire, even as we see the American Empire as the dominant element in the world today. I think the Germans maneuvering with regard to the Balkans and with regard to Bankers Trust, the European Union, and everything else was a preconceived series of actions on the part of the Germans, who are absolutely hell-bent on establishing a German empire and world domination. I think the center-left government was put in power precisely to mask those intentions. Another very significant aspect of the history of the Balkans War was what took place with regard to Russia. In the first place, the humiliation of Russia and also the wholesale military operations at Russia's doorstep took place weeks, very short time after the first Eastern European countries, first Warsaw Pact countries, were admitted to NATO. Specifically, Hungary, Poland, and the Czech Republic have now been admitted to NATO, and they figured very prominently in some of the strategic and logistical operations involved in the Kosovo War. The hammering of the Serbs during this war did much, according to the president of the Ukraine, and this is a verbatim quote, to stimulate nationalist and fascist sentiment in Russia and Belorussia. Something to remember, that Russia is a defeated empire of the Soviet Union, and the more we rub it in, then the more some of the same types of dynamics that obtained in Weimar Germany are going to obtain there. Those who long for the heady days of Russian hegemony or Russian power or Soviet power are increasingly going to be driven to one extreme or the other from an ideological standpoint by the American military operations there. And one of the things this did was to strengthen the hand of extreme nationalists and fascists in Russia and in Belorussia. In turn, I think some of the maneuvering that Boris Yeltsin has engaged in during the course of the war is directly relevant to not only the crypto-fascist forces that have precipitated that war, but is also cognizant of past and probable future political realities in the United States. One of the things that Yeltsin did was he named a new prime minister, Mr. Sergei Stepashin. Well, Stepashin was the fellow who conducted the review of the October Surprise files of the KGB at the request of the October Surprise Committee. The October Surprise was the collusion, the popular name given to the collusion between the Reagan-Bush campaign and the Khomeini forces in Iran to withhold the U.S. hostages taken from the U.S. embassy there until after Jimmy Carter's humiliation and consequent election defeat were assured. The October Surprise Committee, mostly as a means of sort of buttering up the Russians or giving them a little self-esteem to contemplate, requested of the Russians that they review the KGB files and see if there was anything there. They were concerned, among other things, about the possibility that the whole October Surprise story originated with Soviet disinformation. They wanted to find out. Well, Sergei Stepashin conducted a review of Soviet intelligence files on October Surprise, and he delivered his report to Lee Hamilton, which said, yep, there was massive collusion. Of course, Soviet intelligence knew what was going on. The only people who really didn't know what was going on was the American people. But then some of them don't want to know what's going on. But anyway, Stepashin conducted a review of the October Surprise files as the KGB had observed the incident, and indeed they had been following the whole thing, and they concluded that there was massive collusion between the Reagan and Bush campaign and the Khomeini forces, and they specifically named Ronald Reagan, George Bush, William Casey, and Robert Gates as complicit. That's three directors of Central Intelligence and two presidents. I think, and this is obviously my opinion, but I think that the appointment of Mr. Stepashin was a message to the United States saying basically, you know, we may not be as nuclear capable as we were, we may not be as militarily capable as we were, rather, but don't think that you can just push us around like this, because A, we know what you guys have been up to, and we can blow the whistle on your A blank blanks anytime we want. I would also note that Boris Yeltsin, when he recently met with President Clinton, gave President Clinton the KGB files on the Kennedy assassination and Lee Harvey Oswald, or at least some of the files on the Kennedy assassination. In the foreign media, Clinton was reported to have said, quote, "I can use these," unquote. I think that, too, was a very pointed message by the Russians to the United States. The Soviets knew about the assassination of President Kennedy in advance, according to author Dick Russell. They tried to prevent it because they knew, A, it was probably going to be blamed on them and or the Cubans, and B, that it would bring an even more reactionary government to power in the United States. So they tried to prevent it. They were obviously unsuccessful. But the Soviets certainly knew what had happened with the Kennedy assassination. Bear in mind that one of the people involved, his name crops up in several different contexts in connection with the Kennedy assassination, the original killing, is George Bush. That's George Herbert Walker Bush, the former director of Central Intelligence. And George Herbert Walker Bush was appointed by former Warren Commission member Gerald Ford to head up the CIA as the House Select Committee was gathering steam. The House Select Committee on Assassinations, even though its investigation was badly attenuated, they concluded that there had been a conspiracy behind Kennedy's assassination, and one of their recommendations to the U.S. Department of Justice was that they investigate David Ferry and the anti-Castro Cubans in New Orleans. That's who Jim Garrison was after in the first place. And even among Kennedy assassination researchers, Garrison tends to be pilloried. And I think if the epitaph for American democracy is ever properly written, I think that the fact that a congressional select committee investigating the murder of the President of the United States, even though it was badly compromised and Bush, as director of CIA, wouldn't allow any real cooperation between the investigators and the agency, that a congressional select committee could report that there was a conspiracy to murder the president and basically recommend that the Department of Justice investigate the people that poor old Jim Garrison was after, and it was completely ignored. And to this day, Garrison's viewed as a nut. Even among Kennedy assassination researchers, if you start endorsing the Garrison investigation, you will be pilloried. And I think there could be no more sad comment on American political science and historical awareness than that. But I suspect that once again, when Yeltsin gave Clinton the KGB files, I think that the Russians, a traditionally chess-playing people, were engaged in a gambit which was meant to send a signal. They undoubtedly know who the hell killed Kennedy, and they know why. And I think this was a message, first of all, to the people that are running this country, saying, once again, yeah, all right, we're not as strong as we were, but once again, we know what you've been up to, and we're going to blow the whistle if you don't chill your you-know-whats right on down. By giving Clinton that information, they would obviously be, it gives them a certain amount of diplomatic currency with Clinton. It also is going to give them a certain amount of leverage should George W., in fact, win the presidency in the year 2000. I've never seen the media anoint somebody the way they're anointing George W. That guy is a son of a bitch. I'll tell you, he's as mean as his old man. My nickname for him is Terminator 2. But the media are giving this guy... they're giving this guy the softest treatment. By the way, you know, the legislature in Texas only meets every other year, and their business is usually done by May. It's basically, Texas is like a giant hick town. The fact that he may have been able to govern Texas doesn't mean anything. Their legislature only meets every other year, and they're done by May. So the guy has no experience as a legislator. But watching him being anointed by these people is really something. But if, in fact, George W. Does get the presidency in the year 2000, once again, the Soviets know, or the Russians know, what his daddy was up to, and they're going to be in a position to perhaps use blackmail to exact some promises from, exact basically concessions from George W. I would also note that the Russian military behavior during the course of the Balkans War is worth taking note of. The United States says it mistakenly bombed the Chinese embassy. Well, the Chinese were handling diplomatic communications between Yugoslavia and the United States ever since the bombing began because we broke off diplomatic relations. I would note that there's this, frankly, ridiculous Chinese spying scandal that's being bruited about. In fact, there's no evidence of spying at all. Of course, the Chinese spy on us. We spy on them. But this guy, first of all, the FBI's even admitted they don't have enough information to prosecute this guy, who failed a lie detector test in 1984, who was president then. His wife became an FBI informant from 1985 through early 1990s. 1988, a document surfaced indicating that the Chinese had apparently learned a lot about American military technology and who was president in 1988? What was Clinton doing in 1988? And some of the Cold War technocrats have been saying that this report by Representative Cox of Newport Beach is BS. But I would note those Chinese-American tensions. I think that the Republicans are going to exploit people's fear of losing their jobs to, quote, immigrants, unquote, in particular in California, where there's a large Asian-American minority. A lot of them do quite well, and I think that racism and chauvinism is being deliberately promoted by the Republicans. I think that the bombing of the Chinese embassy was absolutely deliberate. They certainly knew which building the Chinese embassy was. American military attachés had been to functions at that building. At least one CIA analyst apparently reported that this was not the right building. There was a letter to the Daily Telegraph in London where a fellow pointed out that they were saying, well, their maps were 4 years out of date, and that's why they were using old maps, and that's why they bombed the building. 4 years ago, that building was a vacant lot. So, as he put it, he said, basically, we're being asked to believe one of two things. Either the Americans attacked this building from several different sides. It was targeted by several different types of munitions that hit simultaneously. So basically, we're looking at one of two things. Either the Americans deliberately bombed what they thought was a vacant lot, or they deliberately bombed the Chinese embassy. This would indicate one of two things, either inscrutability or audacity. Which is the more characteristically American trait? And I thought it was a very interesting way of putting it. I don't think that was an accident, and I think it indicated the degree of arrogance that our national security establishment feels, basically. We deliberately bombed that building, I think. It has been reported by some European media voices that there was actually a Serb radio station that was working inside of the Chinese embassy. I don't know if that's true or not, but that has been reported. Another, La Stampa in Italy, reported that the KLA deliberately used sighting devices to guide American munitions onto the Chinese embassy. Whichever the case may be, I do not think that the notion, I'm not a believer in the whoopsie-daisy theory of history. You know, whoops, it broke. You know, what are we going to do now? Well, I don't know. The bombing of the Chinese embassy was deliberate, in my opinion. I think it was related to the other fractiousness that's taking place between the United States and China. I like the way the writer of the Daily Telegraph said, basically, that either the Americans deliberately bombed a vacant lot or they deliberately attacked the Chinese embassy, indicating either inscrutability or audacity, and which is the more characteristically American trait. I think it's a very good way of putting it. I think that was an indication of the degree of arrogance that we now feel that we can deal with the rest of the world. And the Russians, I think, once again, as a chess-playing people, I think they once again sent a message when that armored column went from Bosnia into Pristina to occupy the airport there. Initially, I don't listen to a lot of talk shows, but I listened to some of that. People in this country were in high dudgeon, man. They went right off the, they in radio parlance, they had the meters pinned into the red. They were freaking out. You think the Cold War had never ended. You know, people just, you know, well, the Russians did this, the Russians did that. And of course, the Russians, when asked about this, they said, oh, it was a mistake. You know, we mistakenly sent an armored column into Pristina. Oh, well. That, again, I think, was a diplomatic raising of the middle finger to the United States, saying, yeah, you accidentally bombed the Chinese embassy. We accidentally sent an armored column into Pristina. Shucks, accidents do happen. I also would note that there have been several indications of friction, increased friction between the United States and Russia. An American military attaché was expelled for spying. Usually those things are done for at signals to send a message. Also, there were large-scale Russian military exercises that were conducted, and in those military exercises, the Russian military proved incapable of repelling aggression without resorting to nuclear weapons. I think that this exercise also was a signal, basically saying, yeah, we don't have the conventional weapon strength anymore to repel an invasion, so if there's any shenanigans, we're going to have to go nuke. You know, we're going to have to go nuclear. And I think this, once again, was a message saying, hey, cool it. But I think some of the maneuvering that's taken place with regard to Boris Yeltsin, I think his appointment of Mr. Stepashin was a strategic move intended to, among other things, give the Russians diplomatic leverage and to send a signal to the United States. And in particular, by taking the KGB files on Oswald and giving them to Clinton in a very high-profile fashion, too. See, that could have been done secretly. That could all have been done behind the scenes in clandestine fashion so that nobody would know about it. It was done in very overt fashion, in a high-profile fashion, so that everybody would know about it. It was meant to happen. And sadly, the only people that don't really seem to grasp what happened with the Kennedy assassination on the face of the earth are the American people, and the so-called progressive sector, who think that, oh, well, you know, the gospel, according to Noam Chomsky, says that there was nothing to it, so that's the way we're going to have to deal with it. But I think that some of the maneuvering with regard to what the Russians have been doing is terribly significant. The real winner in this war, as I said, one could sum up all of this. I could sum up the entire lecture with a sentence that I used at the beginning. What we just did was to drop a nice chunk of our Social Security surplus on the Serbs in order to secure the Balkans for Hitler. When German troops moved into Kosovo, they were welcomed as liberators by many of the Kosovars old enough to remember the World War II period when, bear in mind again, Kosovo was temporarily joined to Albania as part of the greater Albania that the KLA actively seeks. The KLA were brought into a governmental capacity, a quasi-governmental capacity in the Balkans by the German occupiers, who initially brought them right in and had them performing a lot of the duties with regard to regulating the refugees who were coming back in. Bear in mind, again, aside from their organized crime and drug connections, the KLA are many of them the sons and grandsons of fascist collaborators, including many of them, the sons and grandsons of the Skanderbeg division, that Muslim Waffen-SS division that was composed of ethnic Albanians, almost all of them from Kosovo. And bear in mind that the Hanjar division, that's Hanjar 2, is composed of ethnic Albanians, and that unit of Alija Izet Begovic was being projected into that area in the mid-1990s. So with the KLA, it could be viewed perhaps as Skanderbeg 2 or Hanjar 3. And I think the real winner in this war is Germany. And I think that this war in many ways could be, although America's might, its armed might, was front and center in the actual conflict, I think it may very well signal the setting of the sun on the American empire. And that, in a nutshell, is what is, in my opinion, going on in the Balkans, and hopefully will give people some insights into what is taking place there, or what has taken place. I want to thank you once again for coming, and we've got a little bit of this concludes the formal part of the lecture.